Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody out there. Kaylin Patterson, female sponsor of P4P Real Talk, and I got my co-host, Daz. Daz, how you doing?
What up?
Just say hi.
I'm great tonight.
Okay, and this program is sponsored by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship foundation in the world. Did you hear me? I said it. You hear it, and we go with it. If you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on and a vehicle to drive your goals, check us out at p4pmuscle.com. And now, let's talk. Okay, here we go. Here we go. I'm really excited because I got this crazy, crazy, insane individual that's just all over the place but still down to earth. And she's just so good with getting inside your head in a good way. I'm talking about KP, the other one, the female version.
Yo, I'm all giddy over here. Like, I have this, no one can see me, but I have this huge dorky grin on my face. Thank
right,
you for having me.
And the KP. Wow. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you,
guys,
very much. I'm excited.
I hadn't put that two and two together, the Kaylin Patterson and the Dr. Corey Probst. Look at that. How cool is
that?
Yeah,
KP squared.
Kate, I don't even know if I can handle this tonight. This might be a little
this
more
is out of control.
And what I'm eclipsed for. I need some chocolate. Somebody. Somebody help us with that. Oh, shoot. Well, Kaylin, why don't you tell our listeners what we are in store for tonight?
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up because, like, Dr. Joe covered the nutrition side of it, but there's so much more. I mean, you hear about everything that involves with diet and nutrition, and there are so many parameters that need to be covered, and we only cover so many because really, honestly, that's what we understand and what. So we speak on it, but sometimes we speak it in the ground without addressing the other parts of it, and that's the emotional side, the basically the head game, and Corey is very well versed in it, and she's dealt with one of the things that I've been really trying to pioneer because something I saw early on, and I'm sure she's seen it and probably been through it herself, and that's the self-image that gets, like, multiplied to infinity on the female side of it, where you
mm-hmm.
just say, you know, I have to have this body all year or people won't want to look at me the way they saw me on stage, and I won't look at myself that way. So we're going to delve into that. And Dev, I know you have 101 questions to go with it because you actually have to live it. And it's just so many things that need to be covered that we can actually cover now on a show where she can actually put it out there because she's actually lived it, helped people through it, and probably know the warning signs ahead of time now. So I'd love to talk about that today.
No, we might need 101 episodes.
That's all right.
It does with 101 questions.
That's right.
No,
this is
the good stuff.
I got it. It is some good stuff. But before we dive deep into that, Corey, if you wouldn't mind just giving us a little bit of background about yourself, how you came to be with Diet Doc, and just, you know, your experience from a competitive bodybuilder as well.
Sure. Well, I started training when I was 14. I had the choice as a freshman in high school to choose whether I would take physics or weight training. Guess what Corey chose?
You chose physics.
Yeah, you went French. I chose intro to weight training and was lifting more than the boys at that age, and I couldn't get enough. So from then on, I mean, I had always been active as a child and dance and gymnastics, but weight training, resistance training really took hold in high school. And so, you know, I continued with that through college. And really, I did not start competing until I was, it was in 2006. And that's actually how I met Dr. Joe. I was looking for someone who could coach me, and I had a background in nutrition. You know, my bachelor's degree is in exercise physiology. My master's is in counseling, my doctorate is in health psychology and behavioral medicine, but I had never planned on getting on a bodybuilding stage. I was just training in the gym, and a woman walked up to me and one day and said, you know, you should think about competing. And I looked at her like she was nuts, and I was like, what's that? I had no idea about bodybuilding at the time. It was never even a blip on the radar. And so once she had made that comment, and I started doing a little bit of research, started reading, and I lived in Colorado at the time, close to Denver. So I attended like this one-day camp and got a bit interested and signed up for my first show and competed on my own for a while, did my own nutrition with enough success to start competing in the national ranks, but then really, really wanted to work with some experts, and so did a little bit of research, and guess who I contacted? I contacted Dr. Joe, and so we worked together for about a year before we actually met in person. I attended what at the time we called Fantasy Camp. So I traveled to Indiana for my first weekend Fantasy Camp. We met each other for the first time, and he found out what I did, what my background was in. And at that time, I had my own little small wellness business, and I was doing in-home training. I was personal training. I was doing some nutrition consulting, and then I was doing in-home counseling also, and mental edge work with people. So really had found a way to combine all of my passions, nutrition, mindset, psychology. I was writing for local publications. And so, yeah, met Joe, and then so I had hired him, and then he hired me. So it was about 4 months later, after I went to Indiana for the camp, that I, you know, we were talking about me moving out there for the wellness director position for the diet doc, and I moved out there at the end of June, and that was in 2008. So I've been with the Diet Doc since then. I'm now the vice president of the company, and so manage all of the general population, nutrition, and weight loss consulting, and just moved to I'm in San Diego now. We moved the national headquarters out here the year before last, and, you know, we license our program, so it was really about getting to a place where we knew our owners would want to come for training, and no one wants to go to Evansville, Indiana. I don't know why, but so that's kind of my background in terms of how I met Joe. Competing-wise, I'm retired now. I retired in 2012. My goal is always really to just take it as far as I could, and so when I earned my pro cards in figure in the WNBF and then earned my pro card in fit body, I wanted to earn all three pro cards and did that. So with fit body, figure, and bodybuilding, earned those three pro cards. And then my goal was to compete as a pro in every single one of those divisions. And so in my final show, it was in Barbados, and I competed as a pro in bodybuilding. Yeah. And so, you know, Joe talked about this in his interview, like you take it as far as you can, and then you have to make a decision about, you know, how long you're going to keep going trying to be number one. I never was number one in any one of those divisions, but I had fun while I was doing it, and then it just became about really setting different priorities in my life, because it does take a tremendous amount of energy, effort, time. And, you know, when I decided to retire, I was eyeball deep in my dissertation and just thought, what am I doing? I really need to be able to focus better and put what energy that I do have into what's most important for me right now, and that was getting through the PhD. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. Obviously, there are more parts to Corey, but we'll probably get into those as we keep talking. Yeah.
Well, I'm just happy to have you on here because I know that you know what you're talking about. So, we're gonna go back in the past and we're talking about when you and I had first met and there was something that we had seen, and I was still unaware of the bodybuilding community, especially on the female side, but you had pointed it out, and it was such a poignant point where, you know, there's a lot of fear involved in this, and sometimes it can become overbearing, but people keep pushing, you know, the prospective competitors to keep going, you know, see it all the way through, and sometimes that enhances the fear, and sometimes it can be a little bit overwhelming, and that's one of the things I notice that drives it. It's almost like a fake motivation, and I know that you can see that ahead of time. But what do you tell the person that's really getting into the competitive side before they can self-destruct? Because that's a big worry for me.
Yeah, you know, fear drives so much of our behavior, Galen. And you look at anything that we do, and oftentimes it's based on fear of failure and fear of how we're going to be perceived by others and how we compare to others and whether we're going to come out on top or not. And, you know, for competitors, for people who are considering competing, it's always a concern of mine, one, how they're going to navigate the process. How much do they know about what the process involves? Are they at all in tune with how the judging for an external endeavor is going to affect them emotionally and psychologically? Do they have a really strong support system? How might the energy, time, planning, effort that needs to go into competing, if you really want to do it well, I mean, I'll say it like that. If you want to do the best you can with this certain goal pursuit, how is it going to affect the other aspects of your life? And I've had I've seen this happen plenty of times. It hasn't happened a lot in my career specifically, but where a general population individual loses a significant amount of weight is feeling like they're on top of the world. They've gained just a ton of confidence. They have a sense of agency now and efficacy, and they feel more competent in other areas of their lives. Their relationships have improved. You know, they're fitting into they're excited to get dressed in the morning. They're not embarrassed anymore to go out in public because they've, you know, their minds have changed along with their bodies. And then they either have a trainer or someone that says, you should really think about competing. They make that suggestion to them, and I'm just cringing the entire time because they're in such a great place. My fear, like you said, Kaylin, is that that's going to be shattered when you know, what has been built up on the inside so much for them is torn down because now they're being torn apart about their outsides.
Yes.
You're not lean enough. Your shoulders aren't big enough. Your back isn't wide enough. And these are all things that are largely out of our freaking control.
Yeah.
If we're natural athletes, there's only so much we can do. We can do a lot. But to subject ourselves to that external, superficial criticism willingly,
it's scary.
And so being able to go into it with a sense of humor. I mean, we're laughing, like we're talking about this very serious topic, and we have to be able to laugh about it at the same time.
Yes.
Because you just told me I'm crazy.
You are a nut.
But do continue.
I did it.
Do continue.
Yeah.
You did it.
I did it for 6 years. And it was difficult. And I see the people that I work with and how I approached this was to look at it as a challenge. How can I use this experience to gain a better sense of confidence about myself? How can I use this experience? How can I get on stage and not compare myself to others so much as just get a little bit better than I was the last time I stepped on stage? How can I use this experience of hunger right now in this moment to understand my internal needs? Is this psychological hunger? Is this physical hunger? How can, you know, I sat down one day to write on my dissertation. I was dieting for a contest. I was deep into my diet. And I've had to get really, really low on food, guys, to get – I don't have a fast metabolism. And I've been as low as 40, 50 grams of carbohydrates at any one time in my dieting days. Wow. And there was one day where it was just – my hunger was just out of control. It was incessant, just gnawing, gnawing, gnawing hunger. And I thought – because I teach people how to watch their thoughts – and not get swept up by them and believe them and become them and be consumed by them, right? Thoughts are strings of words. They don't have to mean anything. We have thousands and thousands of them every day. If I said this to a client today. I said, if we believed all the thoughts we have, we would be diagnosed schizophrenic. I mean... really, like, we have to learn to just watch them like clouds floating across the sky, otherwise we would go crazy. But so I'm sitting at my kitchen bar, and I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put a tick mark on this sheet of paper every time I have a thought about food. And within an hour, I had an entire front of a sheet of paper full of tick marks. I was like, that's freaking awesome. But it was just a lesson in, you know, being able to look at something very objective. And I think that that's so important for competitors, for anyone who is engaged in a goal pursuit, to be able to step outside of themselves, not take themselves so seriously, not put a meaning to every single thing that happens. And then there's, on top of that, there's the deliberate choice to step away from the things you know are not in your service or aren't beneficial for you. Like, I stopped asking judges for feedback. I just wouldn't. I didn't care anymore. It did not make a difference to me. It did not make a difference in my world. And I didn't want it to. That was the thing.
Yeah.
So making very deliberate and conscious choices about what we do and what we just don't do in order to help ourselves stay healthy.
So I'm actually going to jump in here because you are bringing up a lot of great points. But just to bring this down into, I think, a little more digestible pieces. So as competitors, per what you're saying, we do spend a lot of time deliberately thinking about the things that we do, but they're always tied to the tangible parts of training, things that we can touch. You know, how much are we exercising? How much are we sleeping? What are we eating? When are we eating? You know, all of those sorts of things. And what you're talking about is an aspect of mental training of things that we can't touch. So it makes it a little harder to figure out, well, then how am I supposed to do that? Because I can log, I can log what I'm doing, what I'm eating. But, you know, like you're saying, what am I supposed to be doing with all these thoughts? And how do I train myself mentally to be mentally healthy through this whole process, emotionally healthy through this whole process? How does that work and where do you start?
Well, So, Des, you said, you know, I can write down what I eat. I can write down how I train, like how many reps I lifted and what exercises I did and how long I spent in the gym lifting weights versus doing cardio. You can also write down your thoughts.
Okay.
And this is something that I have a lot of individuals do who don't necessarily have a good sense of how their thinking, how their cognitions, their thoughts specifically are affecting their behavior. So, for example, you know, with a lot of competitors, they binge. Let's just put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
They get hungry, they binge. They're uncomfortable,
yep.
They binge. They get anxious, they binge. I'm not doing good enough, they binge. I'm not exercising enough, they binge. So they are using food to compensate, to avoid, to distract from these uncomfortable emotions. But what leads them there in the first place? Oftentimes, it's the manner in which they are thinking and the thoughts they are having and the meaning they are attaching to a certain experience. Whether that experience is something that occurred in their day, they got a look from their boss that, you know, they assumed meant they're, you know, doing something wrong. They're feeling uncomfortable. They got in an argument with their partner, and now they feel a sense of disconnection, and it feels horrible. They have some responsibility in it. They're angry and don't necessarily want to confront the issue head on. So in many regards, and for, you know, competitors specifically too, like, I don't want to say we, a lot of us, we have such black and white expectations about what we should or should not be doing when we're prepping for a contest. It's like, if we deviate at all from the plan we set up for ourselves for that day for our food, then the whole day is ruined. And it's like, so then what the hell? Like, what the hell? I might as well just eat whatever I want, go because of one deviation. And obviously we know that's not realistic. Like, it's not going to help us in any way to then just throw the baby out with the bathwater and then go eat whatever we want. Then we're further back than we were with just the one deviation. But it's our thoughts about each situation that often lead us towards that negative emotion, and then what we decide, how we respond or react to it. Because we're either, if with reaction, it's very impulsive. I'm uncomfortable, get it away from me. It's a pushback response. Ideally, of course, what it comes down to, what we want people to learn how to do, is to be able to say, whoa, okay, that's an interesting sensation. My heart is beating really fast right now, and wow, my chest is really tight, and my shoulders are up around my ears, and I'm furrowing my brows. So to notice these symptoms within our bodies, things that people can't necessarily see, and to notice how we're acting in the environment too, like, what do I do when I'm anxious? Well, I pace, I move around in my chair a lot, and I fidget, and like, I twirl my hair, and I furrow my brow, and I clench my teeth, and so it's getting to notice the things that are happening on the inside and the outside that indicate to us we're experiencing something, and on the inside, that includes our thoughts. So that was a very roundabout way to get there, but on the inside, that includes our thoughts. What are the strings of words that are floating across my mind? And let's write them down.
Mm-hmm.
And let's take it from what are the emotions that I most commonly experience? So oftentimes I'll ask the people I'm working with, what do you most commonly experience? Worry, anxiety, boredom, fear. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, how do you know that what you're experiencing is anxiety?
Okay.
And a lot of people can't answer that question. But maybe you guys can. So, Kaylin, when you're anxious, how do you know?
I can't sit still.
Okay. You're fidgety. Mm-hmm. You move around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes. Yep.
So that's something that other people would notice, too. If I asked your friend, what indicates to you that Kaylin is anxious? He or she might say, he's all over the place.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, he's like the Energizer Bunny. He's like, won't sit down. Okay, so that's what your friends would say, because they can see the outside of you. What happens on the inside of you to indicate there's anxiety present?
Oh, that's easy. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. I can almost feel like heat around my neck. I start thinking all kind of craziness. I want to bite my dog. No, that part's that's not true. But all the other stuff. Yeah.
Do you have a dog?
I need to talk to your dog.
I was gonna say, I don't even know if he has a dog. Okay.
So one of the thoughts he has is, I need to get a dog.
Don't get the dog, Kaylin. Fight it.
I'm not going to let you get a dog. Yeah. But so, okay, have you ever really taken the time to identify what those, because you said, I have all these crazy thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to share what some of your crazy thoughts are?
Oh, sure. If I work out an extra half an hour, that should do some difference. If I have more food at this time, you know, it's certain things that you just know aren't true, but you still try to rationalize them to make up for whatever you were lacking in.
Okay. So you notice when defensiveness comes in and rationalization comes in and when you're thinking in a really sort of black and white, rigid way.
Yes.
So what you're indicating is what happens with most people is the thoughts that they have. Say the thought is, I'm never going to be able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Or why did I think that this was a good idea? Or...
Yes.
You are such an idiot. Or yeah, that was a funny one.
It happens.
Exactly. And it happens, that inner critic happens for all of us. We all have an inner critic. Those voices can be incredibly powerful to the point where we start believing them. And then that's when we start to feel those, you know, changes, sensations in our body. Like, you say that to yourself, you are such a freaking idiot. What were you thinking? You think you're going to feel good, like feel in your body good, like, woo, yeah, now I'm feeling inspired and I want to go conquer the world. No, what it leads to is, I mean, you can take the high road, positivity, like optimistic. I got this. Okay. I didn't react well in that situation, but you know what? I have all this other evidence in my world that I can. Versus, oh my God, like you really thought you could do this? You're such an idiot. Like, no, there's no freaking way. You're just going to fail again. Like, you might as well just give up. That's the low road.
Yes.
That's the low road, and the low road always ends up at a dead end.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You don't want to do anything when you respond to yourself that way. And yet people think that, like, because I do a lot of work on self-compassion too, people think that if they offer themselves some compassion and say, wow, dude, this sucks, and you know what? It's okay. Like, take it easy. It's all right. You know what? In this moment, this sucks. It hurts. Like, you want to get away from it. It's uncomfortable, but it's gonna dissipate. It's gonna recede. It's gonna go away. This is temporary. Like, everyone goes through this. You are not alone. You are not isolated in this. Like, that is what gives us the ability to bounce back more quickly, get up, and not take it so personally when we experience a failure. But getting back to the thoughts, like, our thoughts that we have are commonly distorted. We may be assuming something. So the boss that looked at me funny, like, I may think that his look, I may assume that that look means that I did something wrong and now I'm going to get a demerit at work, my pay is going to go down, oh my God, I'm going to lose my job. Like, you see how that's catastrophizing? Like, the boulder is rolling faster and faster down the hill. I'm getting closer and closer to the dead end. Rather than being able to notice the thought, the first thought, which was, oh God, what did I do?
Mm-hmm.
When you see that look, notice that thought and approach it curiously and be like, whoa, that was an interesting thought. I have actually no idea that he's thinking that at all. So interesting that that's the first place my brain went.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Do you see the difference?
Yes.
Yeah, and then to go from there to the next step, which is, okay, what are all the other possibilities here? Well, he probably stubbed his toe, like, or he just got a call from his wife and she's pissed about something. I mean, it could be anything. So to be able to, one, notice and recognize what is occurring, two, not take it personally and be able to kind of allow it. Don't try to push it away. Don't try to avoid it. It's there. Like, acknowledge it. So, wow, that's interesting. And then do a little bit of processing and investigation. Like, I wonder where that came from. And I wonder what's going on that I would react that way. So what are all the other possibilities? My mind went in this direction. I wonder why. What are all the other alternatives that could be what are all the other alternatives out there? Take that opportunity to investigate. And then the second thing is to be able to not identify with it. So typically we'll have a thought, you are such an idiot, and we believe it, right? We believe it. I'm an idiot. This is not going to go well. I've let people down again. And then, you know, it just, we feel worse and worse, and it's very difficult to get out of. If we can disidentify from it a little bit through the noticing and to be able to say, okay, this is uncomfortable. This is not where I want to be right now. This is fear and hurt and shame and guilt and discouragement and disappointment versus I am anxious, I am disappointed, I am hurt, I am angry. See how when we identify with it, it's like we're intertwined with it. Instead of creating some level of distance between it and me and being able to recognize and kind of objectify, like that's what you said, Des, we need to be able to objectify it in order to look at it differently. You know, if anyone could see me right now, like once we get the Skype thing rolling at some point, like I'm making all these hand gestures as I'm talking, like I am looking, like my arm is outstretched and I'm looking at my open hand, like that's the object in front of me. That's anxiety. I'm going to look at it. I was talking to a client today, and we were discussing something very similar. He has these very intense reactions around certain situations, and all of us have what are called enduring vulnerabilities, like our triggers. Let's call them triggers. So mine, for example, are, you know, when I feel dismissed, when I feel unimportant, when I feel misunderstood, those for me are huge ones. And I'm instantly triggered when there is any situation in which I start to feel that way, like I don't matter. Wow, you guys better be nice. So with this guy, he's describing for me what's really difficult for him. And a lot of it is based on, you know, what we've been through in the past, how we grew up, the messages that we were sent, experiences that we've had. And these reactions, guys, are really, they're protective in many ways. If we're having them, it's because they worked for us at some point in our lives.
Yes.
So rather than getting pissed when we start to feel that way or when we get triggered and judging ourselves for it, it's more generative to be able to say, wow, okay, this is obviously something that's really important to me. If I'm reacting this strongly, like something is here that needs my attention. So with this guy, I'm on the phone and he's describing what are his triggers. And I was like, you know what? If you could name, because he kept calling, he kept saying it this, it that. And I said, let's name it. What is it? And he's like, well, let's just call it anxiety. I'm like, no, I don't want to call it anxiety. No, we're not going to call it anger. Like, no, let's give it a name. Give it a name. And he's like, well, it's a freaking pain in the ass. And I was like, Pia, P-I-A. Let's call it Pia. And he's like,
love it.
Oh, I like that. All right. Well, I hate Pia. And so now he's objectified it. He can talk about it in a different way because it's not him. It's outside of him. And that is, Des, getting back to your original question, there are many ways that we can make it tangible so that we can look at the thoughts. We can look at the behaviors, we can write them down, and then we can also make tangible our response. What are we going to say to ourselves? What are the words we want to use when we are triggered? We can write those down. You know, I have a lot of the people I work with, we put these things on note cards. And they carry them with them so that any time they get out, they can dig it out of their purse, their glove compartment, wherever, when they're having one of those moments and they need to be very deliberate about how they're going to respond to themselves. So it is it's a practice in awareness, really, and then making a very conscious and deliberate decision that I have a choice here. When we feel threatened, oftentimes we go to, I'm stuck, there's nothing I can do, I'm completely out of control, I have no choices. And that just perpetuates the problem, it makes it worse. So we need to feel in the moment that we have a choice and then be able to exact that choice. And that's what we can make tangible is the choice.
Very true. Well, there's something... because it's almost like a mental buffet, and basically you're just picking out what you normally eat as compared to what makes you want to eat it. And I love that point, but there's something that I noticed, and this is, like I said, when I was learning about bodybuilding, it was so much bro science involved in it that basically people could look away on stage realistically. But because they had done so much damage to their bodies, you know, they would gain back what they had and more. And so I can see what would drive women to want to stay that way if they saw their mentors or people they looked up to basically becoming that wreck that nobody wants to watch, but you can't help but avoid because you keep looking. You know, and it was such a bad, how can I say this? Well, when I remember when I was first reading Facebook and people were basically keeping everybody up to date on what they were doing, it sucked, and everything about it sucked, and they hated everything about it. And I was thinking everything I love about sports was the journey, and I loved, you know, like I loved, you know, having to eat better. I loved all these things. I enjoyed it. So when people talked about it, they couldn't wait. They were like, man, I never realized it was that hard. Instead of saying, man, I don't know if I want to deal with all that negative, you know. And it's like, well, what, how do you over,
there's
how do you get
that,
past
there's a huge
that
shift
mentor
that
moment?
There's a that is a huge mental shift.
Yes.
To go from, this sucks. Like, I hate being hungry. This is awful. Like, to, no one told you you had to do it. Like, this is a choice. This is getting back to choice. Like, I signed up for this. Okay, what exactly did I sign up for? And how am I asking the question? How do I want to approach this? But when you look at, you know, the differences in the way people approach a goal, I mean, there's kind of two camps. If we're going to categorize, people love to categorize, let's categorize. You have people who have what's called an entity lay theory, and then you have people who they're more incremental lay theory. With an entity lay theory, it's almost like a fixed mindset where I am the way that I am. I can't change, and it's going to be sucky. And you either get it or you don't. Like, I was not born with that ability or skill, and so if it's hard, it's going to be hard. There's nothing to learn, and there's nothing, it just is. Versus an incremental theory approach, which is, everything that there is presented to me or in front of me or experience that I have is an opportunity to learn and grow and evolve in some way. So how can I approach this as a challenge? Not as something that, not as a catastrophe every time something feels hard, but as a challenge, as, okay, so this is, and you know what that involves? A sense of curiosity.
Yeah.
To be able to say, wow, this is interesting. Okay, what is this? And I don't know if I'm, am I addressing your question, Kaylin?
Well, the thing is, there was a lot of things in the beginning of natural bodybuilding, because you were dealing with natural bodies, and they would be so thrown so far off whack that the person that's watching all this happen basically sees the person go from phenomenal to basically the ugly duckling. So it's almost
like
the swan turning in reverse. And the question is basically, how do you protect that self-image without destroying the person on either side, you know, the person that's actually competing and the person that's watching? Because I would be more than afraid, if I didn't know what I know of competitions, if I see somebody that looks phenomenal and then you don't recognize them in the gym 3-4 weeks later.
I think it takes a good solid support team and coaching staff to be able to explain what the process is going to look like and the challenges that are going to be ahead of this person. You don't diet to 5% body fat and expect that you're going to be able to maintain that and live comfortably. And of course, comfortable is relative. I mean, I had to get to 5% body fat to feel like I was worth anything on stage. But there was no way, and I knew, that that was going to be a livable weight for me. I can maintain 10% relatively comfortably. And a lot of people would look at me now and think, gosh, you know what, you could get on stage in 2 weeks if you wanted to. And maybe I could. But it's really, it's individual. Two, there are so many different factors to consider. What's your energy level like? Do you feel the amount of strength that you want to in the gym. What are your goals? Are you trying to attain more muscle mass? Then you need to be in a caloric surplus, right? Is your goal just to maintain your strength? How lean is it possible to stay within and have your metabolism be healthy? For a female, like, is this female having her period? I mean, let's be frank here. Like, there are certain, there are certain factors that we have to consider, not just leanness. And it is a challenge to be able to look at, to be able to look in the mirror and see those shifts and changes occur, and not to attribute the change to, you know, something wrong about me that, or a deficit, or like, you know, I'm lazy and I can't believe this is happening. Like I said, on the flip side too, there's, you need a strong support system, and you need people in your corner to guide you. And because, like you said, Kaylin, you know, we get into the sport, we're really ignorant, we don't know what to expect, and until we go through it ourselves, like, I can tell you every single year, every single prep was different for me. And I, you know, I came off the stage a couple times and did it in a way I didn't, I'm not proud of. Like, I gained more weight than I wanted to afterwards in a couple seasons. And every single time I did it, though, and this is my point, we learn. If we can, if we deliberately go into it thinking, I want to learn from this, how might I do it differently next time? You know, and with each prep for me, it was about asking, you know, I may have this thought when I get off stage of, I just want to go eat everything in sight. And I honestly rarely did, because, I mean, the way that I prepped, I was eating more food than I ever would in the off season. And I was able to reach that metabolic building phase 2-3 weeks prior to the show. And I'm eating 450 grams of carbohydrates and 200 grams of protein and 50 grams of fat. And I can't eat that now.
Like,
that's
crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yes, it was. But
God, it
so,
is crazy.
Being able to ask myself, like, when I step on stage, what do I want to be able to say? When I step off stage, what do I want to be able to say? So in those moments where I'm experiencing temptation during my prep and considering that one more bite or another meal or whatever, do I want to get off the stage and think, man, I shouldn't have done that, or I wish I wouldn't have? And utilizing that skill in every area of my life now, too. I mean, we can relate these skills to any other goal, pursuit, or endeavor that's important to us, not just bodybuilding. And, yeah, no, I think it's just hugely important to be able to go into it with solid mentors who...
Hey, say that again. Solid.
Go into it with
mentors,
solid
not just
mentors.
People you thought were something, But that's a big difference. It's a big difference. And I think that's where some of the bridges get broken.
Exactly.
And it's lacking. And it's like, but you know, see, so here's the deal. Getting back to the point that Corey made earlier is that, you know, once you see someone starting to get success, you know, just in general, you're in the gym, he's looking great, she's looking great, you're in love with competing, so you suggest, well, hey, have you thought about competing? And when we say that, and we don't mean any harm by it whatsoever, it's meant to be an encouraging factor, but when we say that, the thought that keeps popping into my head is, we have no idea what emotional state this person is in to begin with. And so here's the point there, is that if they, even though they're looking good, they may still not understand their own self-worth, or they're still unhappy with their body the way it is. And that's something that mm-hmm. competing can never fix for them. It doesn't matter
if they
get the pro card, if they win, if they are not already emotionally and mentally happy with themselves, it doesn't matter what their body's ever going to look like. And that's even more, almost more devastating. And I see so many posts, absolutely beautiful girls out here, young, could have a huge career ahead mm-hmm. of them. And all they can post about is how they don't feel beautiful anymore. They're having a hard time putting, you know, the weight back on. And they've gained, 5 pounds, but they're having a hard time with this and hard time with their body self-image and all of that. And it's because they were never at a happy spot before,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I,
you know,
honestly, I don't even know what you do with that.
That's such a great point. That's such a great point, Des. And gosh, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about when I was in college and was struggling with an eating disorder. And it's funny because I was just like, I just had a recent conversation with my mom about that time in my life. I mean, I was 19, I'm 37 now. So it's been almost 19 years since that time.
No way.
And I know, crazy, huh? I'm so old. Getting old.
No, don't say it. Don't say it.
I just got notices about my 20-year reunion, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. But it brings me back to that time and what was occurring for me then. And so you're talking about these women who are really kind of broken inside, and really focused on the external and superficial, because they don't know how to be in touch with themselves, Des.
Mm-hmm.
These are women who are very emotional. They have emotion, but they don't know how to be with it. They don't know how to acknowledge it. They don't know how to let it out. And they fear that if they do, they are going to be judged or ostracized or criticized or critiqued. Mm-hmm. And what I've seen with all of these women that I've worked with, and a lot of them come from the bodybuilding world with significant disordered eating tendencies, is they're super sensitive and lovely and creative and emotional and beautiful on the inside and so terrified of sharing that with the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so for them to begin to honor and, honor who they are and all the parts of themselves, because, dang, I mean, each one of us has so many varied parts and a lot of parts that we don't particularly like about ourselves, but they're ours. They're ours, mm-hmm. and we're going to carry them around with us for the rest of our lives. And so to begin to honor and accept each part and as part of honoring each part, letting that part speak is really kind of one of the first steps to healing. There's a book that I read when I was going through my period of disordered eating called Eating in the Light of the Moon that discusses the feminine, the masculine parts of ourselves, and of course in this culture. Yeah. In this culture where, you know, we're supposed to be one way or another way and fit into a box and look beautiful and, you know, and that's, I think, changing.
Thank God.
It's still there. We're socialized to, you know, to where we're supposed to be a certain way. But it really hits on how we need to be with and honor and acknowledge and accept and cherish every single part of ourselves and let it speak and connect with others who can accept those parts of ourselves too and love us because of them and the parts of ourselves that we dislike.
Yes.
And so we need the mentors, we need the friends, we need the confidants who can accept and love us really because those parts make us nuanced and deep and layered and lovely.
Another good point, the confidence, because you can't be telling all your business to everybody.
No, you can't. We have to feel safe, and we need to know that we can trust the people that we share things with.
Yeah, not Facebook.
Gosh, dang. You know, I see this stuff. Yeah, no. That's one of those things where you're like, okay, is this really a good decision? Do I want to put this out there for the entire world to see? Sometimes that's okay. A lot of times it isn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
What?
No, that's so good. Hey, Corey, we got to have you on. I still have, like, 6 more topics that we got to cover, but we're running out of time.
We are. I would love to join you again.
All right, awesome. We will definitely be sure that we get that scheduled, and we'll have to do that sooner than later. But I just want to say thank you. I mean, you have covered so many things tonight, and I think, you know, things that people have been feeling, not necessarily willing to ask about, or they're feeling it and weren't quite sure what they were feeling. So you've helped give a context to a lot of these things. So just wonderful to have you on the show tonight. And as we wrap up, just want to turn the floor over to you one more time to share any last-minute thoughts, and to also, Kaylin especially likes to give all of our guests an opportunity to give a shout-out to any and everyone that, you want to give a shout out to for, where you've gotten to thus far in your career.
Sure. Well, first, thank you again to both of you for having me on. I've enjoyed the time, and I hope that for everyone listening, it was insightful and that we talked about things that can really be utilized in your lives. But shout outs. I just want to say, if you're in San Diego, come see me. Like, I'm relatively new to the city, and we have a studio here, and I'm here with Luke Probst, who is my cousin and the Diet Doc and Team K training director, and he does personal training, and we do classes, and it would just be really great to meet more people in this community and get to know you. So there's that. And then, I know Joe talked when he did his interview with you about how excited we are that we license our program. And so to get more Diet Doc owners within the U.S. and even overseas to really affect enduring change within nutrition and mindset in a very comprehensive way to change lives, that's what we're after. And anyone who is interested in our licensing program, in nutrition and weight loss consulting with us for permanent change, please contact me. And is it okay if I put my email out there, guys?
Go right ahead.
My email is Corey, and it's Kori@thedietdoc.com. And my phone number here, and again, the San Diego office is our corporate headquarters. It's 858-935-9058. So any way you'd like to get in contact with me would be awesome. So thank you again,
Very
you
cool.
two. I hope that we can talk again soon.
Oh, no, we will.
Oh, we definitely will. We definitely will. And so, anyone listening, Corey had referenced their licensing program and being a consultant, but if you are looking for a trainer yourself or a consultant to talk about your nutrition, any of the emotional elements that Corey addressed tonight, feel free to reach out to those same that same email and that same number and give her a call. And they'll
Please.
Love to hear from you and are excited to help you any way they can. So thanks so much, Corey. Have a wonderful evening, and we will definitely be in touch again with you soon.
Kimmy Squad, yes! Thank you, guys. Have an awesome night.
You too.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
So incredibly awesome to have her on the show tonight. Loved every minute of it. So I hope you guys have been taking notes and you had a lot of takeaways from that. Great show tonight, but we also are planning on having a great show this coming Thursday. We are going to have Mr. Joe Perez. He is the promoter of the Chi-Town Showdown. Kaylin, I know you have a lot of personal experience with Joe. Why don't you leave us with a couple of thoughts on, you know, what we can be looking forward to?
Well, this guy, honestly, I knew him back at the end when we had the Gold's Gym in Joliet, and he was not a dreamer because I would hate to say he was thinking he could get to it. He knew he was going to do it. He just didn't know how to go about it. He basically needed – he had the foundation in his mind. But then he had to just start laying a foundation. And thankfully, the man is a construction worker. So he basically mapped it out, like, in that aspect. And it just – he basically changed everything about shows, how they come out, and just his one-of-a-kind trophies, the way he set the atmosphere was basically what he wanted as a competitor, because he's a competitor as well. And he set that out, and he laid it out so nice. And it's basically the spot right now in that region where you can't you don't get a name. You know, ask Chris Wells, ask Chris Salgado, ask anybody that's one of the top pros in that region, John Parrish, Rich Feliciano, anybody you want to think about that came out of there on the feminine side, same way. It's just you don't get your name and reputation in that area until you compete at that show.
All right, so 7 o'clock Thursday, it is the 11th, February 11th. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe we're already to February 11th. But join us, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Yeah. One more thing before we forget. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a nervousness in contacting Corey, do not fail to reach out by reaching out to either Dez or myself or on the Midwest Muscle page. And ask that question because we will relay it to her on the next time she's on the show.
Oh, we definitely will. Or we'll get the answers ahead of time and try to share them if it looks like it's going to be a little bit before we can get her back on. So, you know, we always love to hear from you. So on behalf of myself, Kaylin, and P4P Muscle, if your body is a temple, what did you say?
Who's Thursday?
Until Thursday. Who's Thursday? Thursday.
Yeah.
Joe Perez.
Yeah.
And on behalf of Joe Perez, too, Kaylin. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, people, if your body is a temple,
Crazy.
Let's build it.
Crazy.